A61, number 19A.
Yeah?
Isn't this one of the first motivating forces that a young, growing person has, is that search for identity?
Yeah.
Isn't that what we're talking about?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Look at the 3,000-year period, huh? They didn't know their identity. They said, I go out of the land of Ur. I want to find the promised land. I want to find what is my identity. Where can I find it? And so they wandered and wandered and wandered for 1,000 years to find their true identity. And every time they found a little bit more and a little bit more, they changed their name and changed their name. And so now I'm getting nearer. Now I'm getting even a bit more nearer, still a bit nearer. Until finally they crossed the Jordan and said, now I got it, and settled down. And the 1,000 years were over. Huh? And the government of the churches could settle in. Mm-hmm.
Isn't this possibly where we stumble over this, because this is where the drive comes to get on with it and do it, and yet we're so comfortable, a lot of us, in this mortal mind state of tranquilization, as far as I'm concerned, that the church has had me in for 40 years,
mm-hmm.
that we find it difficult to face up to this and make the decision to really find out who the devil we are.
Yes, yeah, yeah, that's it.
This is a big hurdle, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. Who the devil we are, huh? That's so. Huh? That's so. Huh? That's not the devil, huh? Yeah, as Don has said, we really need a bit more of that pioneering spirit, you know. We are already now in a soft bed, huh? Everything goes too well, and we are very well off and so on. This is the most dangerous period when things go well materially. In the whole of history, of spiritual history, there was always a decline when everything went fine materially. The decline never came when the challenge was big. The decline came always when a nation or a culture has succeeded. Then came the decline. When they have no more enemy, then the decline came. When the Christians were acknowledged by the emperor in 330 roundabout, and Christianity was accepted at the court, the decline set in right away. Up to that point, Christianity was vigorous. The moment it was acknowledged as a state religion, that was the end of it. Out. Finished. And so it is with every religion, with every culture. There must be always the pioneering thought. But if you think one is a good Christian Scientist, if one can travel around first-class airplane and stay at the Hilton, this is not Christian Science. Much nicer to stay in the college and in a bed and really do something about it. Okay, yes.
It's like a waterbed. Every time we move, it rocks us back to sleep.
Yes. All right. Now, let's take some references to see if we really can read the textbook and see how the synonymous term can be understood. We take 393, line 8. We had on the soul, we had soul is the master, didn't we? All right. Now we read here, mind is the master. Now what is true? Is now mind the master or is soul the master? Master? but even master of what? Corporeal sense, which would indicate soul, which would demand soul. So twice we would have a reason to see that Mrs. Eddy would have to use soul as the master.
But up above is talking about mortal mind.
But above is talking about mortal mind, huh?
The mind is the control of mortal mind.
Yeah? Yes? Yes? So can you see, we have to, you have learned the rule, huh? The method, huh? You have learned the method to say, what is the question? This sentence, mind is the master, is the answer. You can hear that this is the answer. The proposition that is put forward is above. Huh? And the proposition above, done, would be what?
Because the body seems to be self-acting only because mortal mind is ignorant of itself.
Yeah. Yeah. So she speaks about the body, huh? And she speaks about the body, but is it self-acting? Is it mortal mind? Huh? Or is it mind? Yeah. Can you read, perhaps you read before, from 4, the body seems to be self-acting. The moment you hear the body seems to be self-acting, you hear mind, self-acting. Only because, and now comes the reason, because mortal mind is ignorant of itself, of its own action. Can you hear all mind, of its own action and of their results? Again, ignorant. Can you see again mortal mind? Ignorant that the predisposing, remote and exciting cause, again mortal mind as the cause, of all bad effects, is a law. Again, you have mind, a law of so-called mortal mind. Now, how on earth can we now control the body if we see that mortal mind seems to be self-acting? Therefore, we have to correct mortal mind's self-action by the divine mind. That divine mind is there for the master. Is that clear? But please ask me, don't hesitate. Think you ever have to live a whole year with, because the next assignment will be that I want you to go through all the references 2-3 times for the next year and read them through so that you culture your spiritual ear, your spiritual sense with the synonymous term. So that when you come to this point, mind is the master, that you don't be shocked and say, well, I thought soul is the master. Something in you must react absolutely correctly then. Huh? Say, oh yes, it's mind, because before it was mortal mind saying mortal mind can enact the body. Yes? Take another one. 489, perhaps you read first from 3. If the signs of life were understood, it would be found that the senses of mind, we learned that the senses are senses of spirit, of soul, that the senses of mind are never lost, losing. Is something that has to do with soul, or why don't you use soul? That the senses of soul are never lost, and that matter has no sensation. Everything points to soul. Wouldn't you say so? And yet, she says mind.
I'm not understanding.
Beg your pardon?
She's talking about understanding, the science of life. Is understood,
and therefore understanding
is mind.
No, understanding is spirit. Yes, Chris?
She's talking in the previous sentence
in the sentence that follows, but that means the previous sentence about the manifestation of mortal mind, using the example that of the lobster's claw, that the lobster doesn't have the mortal mind, so when he loses his claw, it grows right back.
Yes.
So it has the sense of soul, that the soul can restore the body, but the problem is in mortal mind manifesting, I think.
Yeah. Benjamin, you did well, huh? Yeah? Yeah, wonderful, huh? You go back to the proposition, hmm? That's right. Lead you on temptation, huh? And pick out the sentence out of the context. Now you go back. And you start reading the subject and not reading sentences. Hmm? What is the subject? She takes up the subject, the less mind. Mind, huh? There is manifested in matter, the better. So the proposition is, the less mortal mind there is, the better. She goes further and gives a proof of that. A specific proof of that. When the unthinking lobster, what is an unthinking lobster? It's that which has no mind in itself. Hmm? The less mind the lobster has, the better. Hmm? Do you hear? You hear mind, huh? The problem of mind being taken up. So when the unthinking lobster loses its claw, can you hear what she says? The unthinking mind losing. Huh? You have at once a sense, here she speaks that mortal mind can lose something. Huh? Mortal mind can lose something. You have a sense of so. Hmm? If when the unthinking lobster loses its claw, the claw grows again. Can you hear soul? Hmm? The reproduction, the reappearing, the reinstatement, the reform, not reforming, but bringing back its identity, its wholeness. Huh? But you see what she says? This is dependent on your mind. Huh? If there is no mortal mind, then the claw can lose it and it grows again. So mortal mind defines if we lose something or not. Only in mortal mind we can lose something. In the reality, in the identity of being, we can never lose anything. So now she goes on. After having taken this as an example and as a proposition to show that, she says, all right, now, how is it, not with a lobster, how is it now in the realm of the signs of life? She has taken an example, now comes the theory. If the signs of life were understood, it would be found that the senses of mind are never lost. Can you see? She had to counteract or mortal mind, huh? The unthinking mind, and say, but in the divine mind, huh? In the divine mind, you can never lose anything. It's never lost, and matter has no sensation. Can you see why she uses the senses of mind? Mm-hmm. So, the senses of mind is a combination. It's not mind. The intrinsic characteristic of mind is not senses, but this is a combination. So always when you read these statements with the synonymous term, you always have to be right on the watch to see, is it stating something intrinsically about the synonymous term, or is she stating a combination with the synonymous term? Did you get this last sentence? Because you have to get this last sentence, or you may spend the whole year, the next year, in vain. Did you get what I said? When you read these references with synonymous terms in it, watch. Do this statement say something about the synonymous term which is intrinsically characteristic for the synonymous term? Like the power of mind, the action of mind. Mind is all action. There is no other power but the divine power, and so on. That was the wrong one. or are the statements which we read with a synonymous term in it, are they combinations? Like here, the senses of mind. When combination, you must see what is rectified, why this synonymous term is used in order to rectify an opposite, or why it is used because the proposition is in line with the synonymous term. Yeah? All right, we'll see. Take another one, 488, just on the opposite page. 30. Yeah, we have to read from 27. If it were possible for the real sense of man to be injured, real sense of man, can you see? You think about soul. That soul, the real senses, cannot be injured. What is injured? Soul, Yeah. So she puts up a hypothesis, if it were possible. Then she says, soul could reproduce them. We have soul that can reproduce. Bring it back to its identity. Reproduce them in all their perfection. So that's very fine. But they cannot be disturbed nor destroyed. Since they exist, who they? The real senses, Since they exist in the immortal mind, why not in soul? Wouldn't you expect as you read, if you read that sense, that you would say, well, soul could reproduce them, but they cannot be disturbed or destroyed, since they exist in soul. They are in soul, they cannot be disturbed, they cannot be marred, they cannot be hurt, they cannot be injured, in soul. Why on earth in mind?
It's right above, she says, mind alone possesses all faculties. She's talking about mental faculties of man.
About all the faculties, yes. What perception and comprehension.
When she says if, she's putting a hypothesis here. If they could be destroyed, then soul will handle it.
Yeah.
Mind is handling it because it's a mental faculty.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's right. Yeah. Can you see that if we would have read together from, let's say from 23, where Judy began, we would have felt that when she is speaking about the real senses of men, that she meant as qualified senses, namely the senses of possessing all faculties, perception and comprehension. These are the mind senses. They are qualified. She actually does not so much speak about the physical, the f- physical senses, the material senses, huh? That could get lost. So it's all about mind's senses, mind's faculties. Mind alone possesses all faculties, perception and comprehension. See, mind has all these faculties, therefore mental endowments. Can you hear? The mental senses, the mental endowments are not at the mercy of organization and decomposition. Now you hear that they could lose their identity. Otherwise, the very worm could unfashion them. Can you hear that? Unfashion them. The counterfeit of soul. Huh? What is the term you have when you take an identity and mar it? Identity distortion, huh? That's what is here under consideration. That they could be distorted, that they could be unfashioned, huh? And so she has to put everything back and say, no, soul can never lose anything. And because soul can never lose anything, therefore mind's faculty cannot be distorted either. No? Therefore, they exist in immortal mind. Is that clear too?
Doesn't she further substantiate that in the end by saying, since they exist in immortal mind,
not in matter. Also, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So can you see the main problem she is taking up is that mind has faculties. That mind has faculties. The mind faculties. These are the mind senses, huh? The mind faculties. And so they cannot be distorted. They cannot be fashioned, huh? And therefore, because soul maintains the identity, the senses of mind cannot be unfashioned. We will always be able to maintain the faculties of mind. We can never lose them. Mm-hmm. Okay. Quite happy about it? We go to 214. Yeah. 214, line 32. Spirit senses are without pain, and they are forever at peace. Now, reading this sentence really would ache if that sentence is stated alone. Would be soul senses are without pain, because we know pain and pleasure are the counterfeit of soul. So at least pain would demand also soul. Senses demand soul. And yet she says spirit senses are without pain. Yes?
The body is matter.
The body is matter. Mm-hmm. Would you explain to the class where you find it, what the proposition is here is? Yes?
On line 30, it is evident that the body as matter has no sensation of its own.
Yeah.
And there's no oblivion for soul and its faculties.
Yes.
So spirit senses are without pain.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you would find your confirmation in the sentence before. Mm-hmm. And if you read that sentence before, it's quite an unusual rendering that Mrs. Eddy makes. Have you noticed that she says, or that she could have said, it is evident that the body has no sensation of its own? This would be the ordinary rendering in the textbook, that the body has no sensation of its own. This would be a blunt statement. And here she makes a very funny interjection, that body as matter. Can you hear? That body as matter. How on earth, why should she do that? Because body is usually matter. Can you see? Do you hear? She could see that what she wanted to bring out is not so much that the body has no pain, but that that body as matter has no sensation of its own. Therefore, she, as you said, she has to correct that thing as matter, that she says, you know, body as spirit has no sensation of its own. So she corrects it through spirit senses. That's to, not to counteract body, but to counteract the belief body as matter. Very, very distinct, very absolutely accurate. It's amazing what how accurate these things are. Can you see that therefore the whole tone here in Footsteps of Truth is all about the soul here over these pages. It's all on the side now, this the senses of soul and so on. So the main tone that runs right through the pages and through the whole paragraph here is soul, 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 soul. It's full of soul. How transient a sense is mortal sight. Can you hear? Transient is the counterfeit of the unchangeableness. Transient, the counterfeit of unchangeable. How transient the sense is mortal sight. The false sense. And it goes on and on. Neither age nor accident can interfere with the senses of soul. No interference. Soul is unchangeable. You can't interfere with it. You can't touch it. But then she wants to show, in one way or the other, why on earth has this body sensation? It would not have sensation if it were not for matter. Because the belief that body is matter, because if we would believe that body is the body of principle, it would have no sensation. Therefore, in the last chapter in the textbook, she speaks then about the body of this principle. That's not the body as matter. But when she wants to say, you know that body, because it says I matter, it suffers. So she corrects it and says, spirit senses are without pain. Yeah. Let me take up another question, which I think we should somehow, sooner or later, take up. It's perhaps going on a tangent again, but a very interesting tangent, a very important tangent. Look here. When we were reading this first short sentence, spirit senses is without pain, we felt this is wrong. Didn't we? The moment we put that sentence into a context, to a wider context, suddenly it is right. Isn't it funny that something can seem to be wrong and then right without changing it? What is it that changes it from wrong to right? Context. What is context? Context is nothing else but to take a wider frame of reference. That's the great secret. At the moment you put something into a wider frame of reference, it is a different truth. Yeah? In other words, I tell you something very simple, and don't be shocked and don't fall off your chair. That a truth, small t, a truth, is not yet a scientific truth. A truth can be a truth, but it does not need to be a scientific truth. That which makes a truth to be a scientific truth is that you put it into a wider context. Then it can be a scientific truth. Yeah?